I'm thrilled and actually honored that you invited me here. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I didn't know that my trip to Cincinnati was going to give me a chance to hear the exciting views of the irrepressible Mr. Norm Pattiz. So that is an extra perk of my trip. I'm not sure I'll be as feisty as my friend Norm, but I'm going to give it a whirl. There's a lot to cover while we're here. I've been getting lots of text messages and emails from friends with topics. Be sure you cover this. Be sure and mention that. Don't forget to touch on that. So we'll cover a lot. I'll go very fast. We have a lot of slides, but I'm going to go through them very quickly. We're certainly going to talk about where we've been in the industry, where I think we're headed, and how radio fits into that, how iHeartRadio fits into it. As I look out, I see a lot of unfamiliar faces, so I think one question that probably a lot of you have is, who the heck is this guy? So I thought I would start there, and I always start by answering that with that I'm the luckiest guy on earth. I have been doing this my whole life. It's all I wanted to do was be in radio, and I've been very lucky to do it. So there's only one job that I would rather have besides the one I have now, and that, of course, is head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. So go Niners. I just came from Dallas. It was a heck of a game, wasn't it? Until that comes along, God willing, I'll be here with you all. So I have sort of done all the jobs along the way. Like Kurt said, I started as an intern at WASH in D.C., and 4 weeks, I think, into my internship, they pulled me aside and said, "Kid," and I always picture the GM having a cigar in his mouth, but I don't think he did. "Kid, we've got $17,000 and a full-time job for you to be the van driver and the morning show helper and the general programming helper. What do you think?" And I said, "I'll take it." I was thrilled to death. And I was off and running, and I've had an absolute ball the whole time. I work all the time, but on the other side of the coin, I feel like I hardly have had to work a day in my life. I'm very, very passionate about what we do, and that's specifically why I'm so driven to be one of the leaders in building a solid financial future for radio. I want to keep doing this. I want to do this another 20 years. I don't want to have to become a baker like my dad was when I'm 50 years old. I love this, and there are so many thousands of people who depend not only on me but on all of us to be the creative thinkers figuring out how to make this thing work for many years to come. That's why I'm so passionate, and I think about that every day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't walk down the streets of New York or whatever city we're in and look at what most people have to do for a living, and it's not what I do for a living, and it's not like what you do for a living. Most people really have to bust their ass compared to what we call work. So I'm passionate about keeping it going, and from where I sit, I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think there's a need to completely turn the radio business upside down. Certainly, many things that we need to change. We certainly need to keep getting better and growing, to be sure. But there's just tremendous upside if we can fix our image problem. That's where it all starts. Because even if we were doing everything perfectly in the radio business, we still don't do a very good job of going out and telling the story. And that's where we've got to start. So one of the things we've done at Clear Channel is put all of our networks together under one umbrella, the Clear Channel Networks Group. Our biggest networks like Premier and our Total Traffic Network also created our targeted networks like our Millennials Network and our Hispanic Network, really a network for any client need and any size budget. And people ask me all the time why I'm so high on the network business. Well, I think there's always going to be a need to reach consumers at scale. Of course, there's a need for targeting. We do that in other ways, but there's always going to be a need to reach consumers at scale. And that's what our networks do. So Premier Network is the gold standard of the network business with the massive reach across 5,500 radio stations around the globe. Even our Total Traffic and Weather Network reaches more people than any of the television networks. And it's fun to put up these slides with the large bars and talk about our big reach, but the real story behind that is not just the reach, it's the frequency. You can afford frequency on these radio networks that you could never afford on a television network. So that's why I think it's a great part of the future of the business. Stations are always going to need great content, and it can't all be live and local. There just isn't a business model there to have live local hosts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on every radio station across America. Some of it is syndicated content. Even the best stations, even the very biggest stations, Z100, Kiss FM, they use imported content in some form or fashion. The key is how stations use that content. And we've got to do a better job of that. And I think from the network side, we've got to do a better job of teaching affiliates how to do that, because the best affiliate programmers take the content and they love it and they care for it, and they make it sound like it's part of a cohesive brand. They make it sound like it's part of the fabric of their station. Other programmers, unfortunately, take the content and sort of set it and forget it, and it becomes a disjointed, not very pleasing listening experience. So there's an analogy that I use as I'm talking to affiliates about this, and it's a construction analogy. I'll start by telling you what we're not trying to do. We're not trying to create mobile homes that are exactly the same, that are pre-manufactured and look and feel the same in every city across America. That's not a good outcome at all. That's not the future of the network business. Instead, I think of it this way. I think that the networks are providing tools and resources to local affiliates. So here we have the beautiful lumber and the gorgeous granite, the high-end appliances, the expertly prepared blueprints. And the local affiliates use that to craft their own beautiful local dream house. And that dream house should look very different from city to city to city if they're doing it right and if we're helping them do it right. So that's why I think the network business is really in very good shape going forward. It's a dogfight out there right now, but I think it provides great content and great advertiser opportunities and is really going to be part of the future of how this business stays successful. So as I said, we've got to get out, and radio's got to tell its story, do a much better job of it, because there's so much upside in just better monetization of what we're already doing. Before we even start doing anything better, we can go monetize it better. We can finally prove that radio has a much better ROI than TV and digital. I think those of us who've been in radio have always known that, in at least in our heart and partly in our minds. Now there's proof. The Nielsen-Catalina study that you probably saw earlier in the year was the proof that we'd been needing. They went out and did the research, an independent third party, and Ad Age reported on one of the results. This was a soda company. I won't reveal which one it is. We aren't supposed to tell you. But they bought ROS radio spots and saw almost a 5-to-1 ROI, which was tremendous. When they bought the premium inventory on radio, in this case it was a sponsorship of the iHeartRadio Music Festival, they saw almost a 10-to-1 return on that investment. Sure, they paid a little bit extra for that premium inventory, but boy, it paid off in spades, because they were associated with something that was central on all those radio stations, and their message stood out more than virtually anything else on the radio station. I was reading in the New York Times this past month, Facebook was excitedly talking about how they provide a 2-to-1 ROI for their advertisers. And I didn't think that was very exciting compared to what we have on average, which is a 6-to-1 ROI for radio. But we don't do a good job of telling that story. And more important than just the plain ROI is the increase in consideration that radio can provide. Radio's really good at that. And advertisers too quickly jump to how to get my product purchased. They skip the step of getting their product considered. And it has to be considered before it can be purchased. If you ask me where I want to go to dinner tonight, I'll rattle off 3 or 4 restaurants. If I don't name a restaurant, the chances are very low we're actually going to go to that one. So you've got to get into that consideration set. Radio does a great job of that. And especially with our personalities, they can really drive that for our advertising partners. So why is radio able to drive such a tremendous return? Because while the rest of the media world is being disrupted, radio's been remarkably stable. It remains the biggest mass medium. I think back to watching Punky Brewster and Alf as a child in my living room. And, you know, nearly half of all families were watching live primetime television at that point. And look at what's happened over the last 30 years. It's been cut nearly in half. And simultaneously, mobile, of course, is disrupting PC usage. New Apple phones announced just 2 hours ago, and already more than half the time we spend online is spent on mobile devices. That's growing in leaps and bounds. I'm not sure there's a chart that we could throw up that's going to show something growing on a steeper curve than that. But while all that's happening, broadcast has remained incredibly stable. Here's the chart that was referenced earlier about an hour ago, where over the last 40 years, we're still reaching 90-some percent of the American population. And of course, it's not enough just to reach them. We've got to do a good job of giving them great content and keeping them around longer. I'm not silly enough to think that the reach is all we have to do. It's also true across all the demographics. It's fun and fashionable to talk about that young people don't use radio or silly things like that. Well, that's not true. Radio is where young people discover the new music they enjoy so much. And one key that we need to latch on to is that radio is one of the last real-time media. So people like listening to something live as it's happening. People count on radio to connect them with what's going on in the world. Elvis Duran is the biggest morning man in the history of American radio, bigger than Howard Stern ever was in his heyday. We've got him on top 40 stations all across America, and he does very well, but he doesn't play hardly any music at all. He talks. Well, that seems strange at first, but why is that? It's because people have been asleep for 8 hours. It's because there's sort of an unspoken contract between the listeners and Elvis Duran. If you listen to my show, I'll give you everything that you missed out on while you were asleep. So by the time you get to work, you'll know everything you need to know. You will have heard the traffic and the weather and the news. You'll have the celebrity gossip. You'll know what happened with Justin Bieber late last night in Canada. You'll know what the hot new music is. And you'll be the person when you get to work and people are talking about things who is in the know. And maybe you've got that extra little bit of knowledge that makes you that special person. That's the connection people love with radio and with its personalities. Radio, of course, is America's companion. 83% of radio listeners say they'd be upset if their favorite radio station was gone. These aren't interchangeable brands. You can't take Z100 in New York and replace it with an also-ran top 40 station whose claim to fame is that they play fewer commercials. That doesn't work. We're not tricking anybody. People get the difference. They're very passionate about their radio stations. They feel a personal parasocial interaction with their favorite radio personalities. So to put that another way, when a radio personality goes away for whatever reason, people experience the same emotional reaction that they do when a relationship breaks up. It's a very powerful bond that they feel with radio personalities. They describe their favorite station as comfortable. They say they value the opinions and perspectives of radio personalities. And I think we're off the mark and wasting our time, frankly, the more we fight about what's real radio and what's fake radio and internet polls round and round and Facebook studies and do you think this is real and do you think that's fake? I'm not sure where that's getting us. I think that it's certainly a different product that you get from terrestrial radio than you get from most, not all, from most internet radio services. I like to think of terrestrial radio as an enriched experience, and the personalities are what provide the benefit for radio. They are crucial to radio. People think of radio personalities as their friends. Ryan Seacrest tells a story of he was walking down the streets of Los Angeles with Paula Abdul and Simon Cowell, I think he said it was, and some friends came, or not friends, but fans came running up, and they ran up to Paula and Simon, and the fans were quaking and shaking and crying, and they wanted an autograph. And then those same fans turned to Ryan, and they didn't quake, they didn't shake, they didn't ask for an autograph. They started talking to him. They said, I heard what you said on the radio. My boyfriend does the exact same thing. I agree with it. You should talk more about that tomorrow, and don't forget to mention such and such. And he thought, my God, what just happened? Why didn't they want my autograph? I'm bigger than Paula Abdul, for heaven's sakes. And the more he thought about it, the more he realized it was the ultimate compliment. They didn't see him as an untouchable television celebrity. They just saw him as their friend Ryan. And it was being on the radio that gave him that special place in the listeners' hearts. And it all begins, for an air personality, with compelling storytelling. That's how they form that very, very deep personal connection and that emotional bond. I don't know of anybody who did it better in my lifetime than Paul Harvey. I remember, like it was yesterday, being in the back of my dad's bakery when I was 6 or 7 years old. Dad's stamping out the donuts on the big wooden block. I'm over at his little desk listening to the hometown radio station and the 12 noon Paul Harvey report. And, you know, Paul talks about the stock market's in trouble, and he talks about the airlines are threatening to strike, and the housing rates are down. And now, page 3, he says. It's a story from America's heartland. It happened just Sunday night in Topeka, Kansas. It was a quiet night in Topeka. You could hear the birds chirping. You could hear the sound of families enjoying the waning days of summer. You could hear the wind blowing across the plains of America. But there was another sound that night in Topeka. It's a sound that was big. It's a sound that was bold. It's a sound that was vibrant and true. It's a sound that Ms. Ida Mae Johnson of Topeka says has brought music to her ears. For Ms. Johnson says that Frank Sinatra has never sounded better than he does on her Bose acoustic wave radio.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. My God, he was 30 seconds into a commercial before you knew he was selling you anything. He had you riveted all the time, and no one ever resented it. No one ever felt tricked. Oh, my God, he's selling me something. He was just your friend, Paul, who was passionate about a product, which is how he ended up endorsing Bose, by the way, and was telling you about it. It's really perfect when it comes together that way. When radio is great, something happens in the air from all those souls converging around one idea at one moment. That's the power of radio, and personalities are the key to that. People perceive a deep, deep personal connection with their favorite radio personality. It's why they choose the radio stations they choose in most cases, because of the personalities. And this is important for our advertising partners, obviously. Half of people say their favorite personality influences their opinion and that they've tried or purchased a product based on the recommendation of an air personality. It stands to reason, doesn't it? They think of them as their friends. How do you hear about the hot new restaurant in town? Your friends tell you. How do you decide what movie you're going to go see? Your friends mention it to you. That's how you learn what's going on, is by hearing about things from your friends, and that's how people look at radio personalities. They are the key, the number one key to radio's future. I think they're the number one weapon. They're our number one offense. They're our number one defense against most music collection services. And radio is also on the go, obviously. Radio is mobile. We talked so much 10 years ago about the connected home coming our way. It hasn't quite shaped up the way I think everybody thought it was going to. It's now more about the connected individual. We're on the go 70% of the time. We're outside the home. We're in our car far more than we've ever been before. And when you look at who's reaching people outside the home, it's radio. Hands down, nobody comes close to it. And by the way, inside the blue circle, which represents inside the home, radio is still a really very respectable number two in reach, only behind television. And radio is consumed in a more mobile way than what we traditionally call mobile itself. So AM/FM radio, two-thirds of that consumption happens while people are outside the home. Just the opposite is true when it comes to people consuming websites and mobile apps. Two-thirds of that usage comes while people are sitting on their couch. That's not really mobile at all. I like to talk about auto a lot. It's very important, obviously, with iHeartRadio, which we're going to talk about in a moment, but auto, I think, is key to radio's mobile appeal. Very hard to get into the car and not turn on the radio. The radio provides that companion sitting in the passenger seat with you, helps you get where you're going. And I love this slide because it shows the CD player penetration still. If you talk to media people, they would lead you to believe that there's not a CD left in America anywhere. But clearly the men and women and children of America didn't get the message, because 61% of people are still using CD players in their car, and they enjoy doing it. Radio reaches consumers at the point of purchase. Really important as we go to advertisers to tell this story, again, about getting into people's mind, being top of mind, being in that consideration set. What are people doing in the 30 minutes right before they shop? Well, they're listening to the radio, 49% of them. Far and away, the number one, people aren't reading a newspaper. They aren't watching television right before they get to the store. They're listening to the radio. What better way to be in their mind? And you need to be in their mind, because 76% of grocery store decisions happen in the store. 33% of people say they go into the store with no list whatsoever. They're making it up as they go along. What better way to be top of mind than to be on the radio right before they go in the store, or better yet, to have air personalities talking about their products right before they go into the store? And finally, while the rest of the media world's being disrupted, radio targets effectively at scale. So I talked about our targeted networks that we launched at Clear Channel earlier this year. Other groups have done similar things. Back to my point about getting out and telling the story, you know, our iHeartRadio Millennial Network reaches far more people than MTV or VH1, by the way, with much better frequency than you could ever afford on television. But I'll bet if I walked out here on the streets of Cincinnati and asked 100 people who reaches more millennials Indianapolis. Thank you. Art Volo's giving me a dirty look. I thought, what did I do? That's funny. Thanks. If you asked 100 people who reaches more millennials, Clear Channel or MTV, I think most people are going to tell you they think it's MTV, but they're wrong. Ask 100 people who reaches more Hispanics, Clear Channel or Univision. Most people are going to guess it's Univision, and they're wrong. Talk about needing to get out and tell a story. Radio campaigns are just more efficient than TV or digital. For the same spend, radio delivers audiences 7 times larger than broadcast TV. And again, only in radio can you afford the frequency that you really need for a campaign to be effective. And all the bells and whistles, like social amplification and personality endorsement. You can't typically get those from a television network. Same thing with Google. Radio delivers twice the audience size in a typical campaign than Google could, and about 4 times as much frequency. So we're very proud that radio is obviously at the heart of Clear Channel. That's not going to change. 245 million monthly reach is big. Of course, what's more important is what we do with those people once we have them coming in the door and how we keep them. How do we put it all together? It's 850 powerful local radio brands that we're very passionate about, and we've packaged them together into big and small and medium-sized national networks, so it's an easy activation for advertisers. We think that's very important. Gone are the days of having to call 850 radio stations to activate messages. We can change copy in just minutes across all 850 stations in the network. And obviously, we're very serious about digital. So the other part of my job is being the president of iHeartRadio, so I take it very seriously, obviously. And, you know, we see digital as an extension of radio's mission. Be where our listeners are with the products and services they want. It's an expanding of the reach of radio brands. It's an extension of the life of radio brands. It's the way that our powerful radio brands are going to have a fabulous, fruitful life for many years to come because we take digital so seriously. You know, there are 1 billion AM/FM radios out there. Compared to that, a relatively small number of computers and smartphones. But boy, is that growing in leaps and bounds, obviously, which is exactly why we take it so seriously. If I showed you this chart from a year ago and 2 years ago and 3 years ago, you'd see the purple and the red circles growing quite rapidly, as you know. We can't be this guy. And having our head in the sand is not going to lead anywhere good. I'm amazed as I talk to my terrestrial radio friends at other companies, how many of them have done one of two things, either completely ignored digital for the most part, or tried digital, couldn't figure out how to monetize it fast enough, so they gave up the ghost and went back to their old way of doing things. That's not going to lead anywhere good. In fact, it's going to lead somewhere really bad, and it's not good for any of us when there are radio companies doing that. The value of digital for radio, obviously, it provides additional listening opportunities. I don't really need to read the rest of the slide. I mean, that's enough right there, but it also provides additional targeting for advertisers, which is so important. Our partnership with AdsWiz has been great, and it's allowing us to compete in a world that we weren't able to compete in before. I don't look at digital as a replacement. I think it's another choice. I think another way of saying that is I don't believe, based on the research that I see, that people who use Pandora or Sirius hate radio. I don't believe that. I think it's just the opposite. I think those are the people who love radio the most. They love radio so much, they want more of it. They want more choices and more options, and they're spending more time than ever consuming all of those audio options. That's why I think that digital is something that is going to help us in the long run, obviously. This is one that we could argue all evening about, and it sort of gets to that, what's real radio? It's not a healthy, fruitful debate, I don't think. I do think there are some clear distinctions to be made between what's radio and what's a music collection in many cases. But the reason I put this slide up is to show you that I'm excited that iHeartRadio is really the only service that gets to play in both sides of that equation. And you've got to be in both sides of the equation because, by the way, the men and women of Indianapolis or Cincinnati, wherever we are, Art, they are in both places too. They all agree with the statement, and their behavior shows that people use their music collection and their FM radio, but they use them at different times and for different reasons. Well, that's not earth-shattering. When you want to be connected, you want to know what's going on in the world, you want some companionship, You turn on the radio. When you don't want that, and there are times that people don't want that, of course, for any of us, you want to unwind, you want to relax, you don't want any interruption, you turn on your music collection. And radio, as I said earlier, is where people are discovering new music. So young people, too, they're discovering new music on the FM radio. Before you can go to iHeartRadio or Pandora or others and type in Imagine Dragons to create an Imagine Dragons custom station, where do you think people are discovering Imagine Dragons? They're discovering it from their FM radio. That's the number one place that people are discovering new music, all-age people. And when I say we take digital seriously, our radio brands are everywhere. That's a huge mission for us, obviously. All of our station brands extend digitally. And we're a leader in social, too. I think this is really important for terrestrial broadcasters to keep this in mind. Frankly, not just terrestrial. It's important for everyone in the room to keep in mind. How important it is to be on social. The days of just buying television advertisements to advertise your product are long gone. You've got to find new ways of connecting with people. Social is one of the big ways that we do it. About 35 million people that we reach, Facebook likes across our Clear Channel network. And the iHeartRadio brand that didn't exist in its current form 4 years ago had no likes 4 years ago before we created the first iHeartRadio Music Festival, has over 7 million with a lead over Pandora, who's been at it much longer than we have at iHeartRadio. This is a stat we haven't shared much. We just stumbled across it not too long ago, actually. In 2013, iHeartRadio was the number 5 media brand on Facebook. So Disney, MTV, ESPN, History Channel, and iHeartRadio were the 5 most liked media brands on Facebook. But the more impressive stat is people's engagement with those brands on Facebook. Here it is now. So what this says is all the people who like Disney on Facebook, about 25% of them interact with the brand somehow. They like their photos. They comment on their social posts. Over 90% of the people who like iHeartRadio are interacting with it. They're liking the photos. They're posting, in a lot of cases, on all of the iHeartRadio social posts. It really speaks to the power of that connection that people feel with the iHeartRadio brand and the stations and the personalities they can get through iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio is obviously the digital focal point for us at Clear Channel. No surprise there. Over 20 million songs now, 1,700 live radio stations, and I'm very excited and proud that we talked about Next Radio earlier. iHeartRadio is not a Clear Channel thing. iHeartRadio is an industry thing. It's an industry thing that a lot of other broadcast partners have joined us, and we're excited to get more. That's a big initiative for us. It's going to help everybody. 50 million registered users on iHeartRadio. We got there faster than any other music service. We got there also faster than Facebook and Twitter, racing up to 50 million. Now approaching 400 million lifetime downloads of the iHeartRadio app. And our digital ad solutions are growing almost on a weekly basis with targeted audio capabilities across both live and custom radio. The awareness is something we track very carefully. How many people have we made aware of iHeartRadio? That's grown from nothing 4 years ago up to almost 70%, not that far behind Pandora, who's been around a long time and does a great job. I think that iTunes radio number you see there is inflated. I think people are thinking that we're asking about iTunes and they're confusing it. I don't believe 63% of Americans are aware of iTunes radio. But beyond just the awareness, it's how much do people love the brand? Do they have a strong affinity for it? And this is the Net Promoter Scores that we look at very frequently. USAA, the insurance company, is always the gold standard when you look at a Net Promoter Score scale. On the other end of the spectrum, you see US Airways and Time Warner have some work to do. But a very, very healthy score of 60 for iHeartRadio, ahead of Netflix, Spotify, Pandora, well ahead of iTunes. So we're really very proud of that. People feel very passionately about iHeartRadio, as do we. So how did we get it to where it is in such a relatively short amount of time? Did we buy television commercials or newspaper ads in the Sunday Circular? Did we buy billboards on the side of the road? Actually, we didn't. We could have done the billboards, and we wouldn't have had to pay for them. But we didn't do it. We just used radio advertising. Isn't that the darndest thing? What a wonderful case study. The very best case study we have is to go out and actually talk to advertisers and potential advertisers about the success of iHeartRadio, because we did it solely by advertising on the radio, and in most cases it was personalities talking about it on the radio. It's why we built our experiential platforms at Clear Channel, the iHeartRadio Music Awards, the Country Festival, the Pool Party, of course, the granddaddy of them all, the iHeartRadio Music Festival, version 4 coming up next week in Las Vegas. We didn't go into this business saying to ourselves, hey, let's go compete with Live Nation in the concert business. It wasn't about that. It was, what can we do to give our air personalities on the radio effectively license to be speaking about iHeartRadio and the iHeartRadio product year-round? That's why we do these events. They're promotional tools to, very successfully evidently, bring awareness and usage to iHeartRadio. Same thing with our Always On franchises, our iHeartRadio Ultimate Contest, world premieres, album release parties, our theaters that we've built, the iHeartRadio Theater in Tribeca and also in Burbank. They're all ways that we promote the iHeartRadio brand, and that's how we've gotten where we are. But of course, what's next for iHeartRadio? That's what people wanted to know when a guy with a non-digital background became the president of iHeartRadio. It was the first question they asked. Good God, what does this mean? What are they going to do now? Are they going to turn things upside down? And I told them absolutely not. And I used another one of my football analogies, which is, I look at this as halftime of the football game. So it's time for us to go into the locker room, catch our breath, take a cold drink, and look at what worked well in the first half and what didn't work well in the first half. The good news is the evidence would suggest most of the plays that we called, to belabor the analogy, most of the plays that we called worked quite well. But I think coming out in the second half, we're going to call a few different plays, that's for sure. And one of the things we're already undertaking is simplifying the design of iHeartRadio. We rolled out our new 5.0 app earlier this summer. It's already got registration numbers going up. It's got our dual usage numbers going up. So dual users are the people who use both the custom and the live feature inside of iHeartRadio. They're our very best customers, as you might imagine. Once they discover both, they spend a whole lot more time inside the product. And the new, simpler, cleaner user interface has made it easier for people to go back and forth and to discover things on both sides of that fence, if you will. So we're thrilled with that, and we took the lead from that to design our new website, which you are the first people outside of my office to see this. It's coming later this month, the new iHeartRadio website, version 6.0. Much cleaner, much simpler, much easier to get people very quickly into a listening experience, which, after all, is why we're doing this. So they don't have to search around, and they can easily find what they're after. I invite you to try it. When you see it launch in another couple of weeks, please give it a whirl, and let me know what you think, what you love. I thank you in advance for all of the fabulous TLH that you'll be helping us with by testing it out. So I look forward to a spike in the end of September on that. Who's the competition for iHeartRadio? I get asked that all the time. The staff wanted to know that, wanted to know my vision on that early in my tenure with the iHeartRadio team a couple months ago. And people always guess, well, it must be Pandora and it must be iTunes Radio, it must be Spotify. I don't look at it quite like that. I think people, it's natural, people want to draw a Coke-Pepsi kind of comparison, but I don't think we have the luxury of doing that. I think trying to do that would be like trying to compare a slicker to an umbrella to a pair of galoshes. I think all those things have something to do with keeping a person dry, but they're all completely different products, and they go about it completely different ways, different use cases for each one of those things. That's how I think about iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, and all those others. So if that's not the competition, well, my God, who is? I remember in my radio programmer days, we would always have the competition's logo up on the wall, and we'd think, oh, we're going to get them. Or we'd put it on our dartboard, you know. I don't think we have the luxury of picking out a competitor at this point. I think the reality of 2014 and beyond is that we're competing with anything and everything that's fighting for the attention of consumers. So that's hard to put on your dartboard, but unfortunately, I think that's the reality of where we are in 2014. It's a much more complicated picture. So coming full circle, who the heck am I? I'm the guy who 20 years ago was running the Casey Kasem countdown and driving the van. Today I'm here in Cincinnati and or Indianapolis with you good folks. And the goal, of course, is 20 years from now, I hope I look a whole hell of a lot better than that. I don't know who came up with that picture. But the goal is, I want to be here with you again in 20 years, and I want us all to shake hands and congratulate ourselves because we work together to solve the biggest problems of our industry and figure out how to have a fun and festive and profitable future for both radio and internet radio. So thank you very much. It's good to see you.